And welcome in to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you as always. We'll be taking you up to Preds pregame tonight, coming up at 7:30. Puck drop at 8:30, really more like 8:45 tonight here on 102.5 The Game. Going to be a late one coming up in Game 4 as the Predators face the Colorado Avalanche. Preds in an 0-3 series hole for the first time in franchise history. They'll try to avoid a sweep for the first time in franchise history. Chase McCabe and I have you covered leading up until Preds pregame when Darren McFarland will take over. We got a whole lot of stuff to get through today here on Preds Insiders. We'll be joined by Jim Diamond coming up at 6:30 from AP. Get his thoughts on the Predators and the Avalanche. Get his thoughts on a certain coaching move made today in the NHL as well. Jeremy K. Gover coming up at 7 o'clock. As always, we welcome your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Chase McCabe, our fearless leader. How are we doing? What's going on?
You know, I'm good, Robbie. It's funny. I kind of walked around the arena, walked out on the plaza for a little bit. The band's going. And I know we got a while, obviously, before things start. But, you know, there is that. It's kind of like they've never been in this position before. This much of a do-or-die situation being down 0-3. And we were talking about it today on the DDC that we've all seen crazy things happen in hockey. We've seen a Tampa Bay Lightning team win the President's Trophy, be the best team in hockey, and get swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets. We've seen the Nashville Predators go to Chicago, not give up a goal, and sweep the Chicago Blackhawks. We've seen, was it a Peter Laviolette Philadelphia-led team down 0-3 against Pittsburgh, and they come back. So, I mean, these things have obviously happened. But looking at things from a realistic point of view, the Predators have an uphill climb. I mean, that's just simply what they have. Colorado has lived up to the Stanley Cup favorite part thus far in this series. And, you know, I was talking to somebody today, and they asked me, you know, what kind of my thoughts were of what they needed to do different. And I said, well, stay out of the box. And if you don't do that, kill a penalty. I mean, that was the biggest difference in Game 3. And I thought that they actually played much better in Game 3. But we're going to have a lot of time to talk about all of that. And hopefully we're talking about a Game 5 before this day is over.
Well, and if you're the Predators, you know, the opportunity is on the table for you tonight. All you got to do, you can't really focus on, this is, you know, such a cliche thing, but I think when you're in a situation like this, it's absolutely true. I mean, you can't win three games tonight. You can win one, and that's what you got to do. Win one game, force it back to Colorado, see what happens in Game 5. It's some Hendersonville High School math right there. That's what we do. And if you can get it back here to Game 6, then, you know, the belief starts to creep in a little bit. But look, I mean, let's call it what it is here. The Predators, I think you put it kindly, uphill climb is what they have. And you know, that starts tonight coming up in Game 4. I do agree with you. I thought the Predators played pretty well 5-on-5 in Game 3. But, you know, it's going to take a complete effort. You're going to need to play well 5-on-5, and you have to be better on special teams coming up in Game 4 to give you a chance. Because if you're Colorado right now, you smell blood. You're up 3-0. You've played really well. You've been by far the better team in this series. And you're looking to close this thing out tonight, get you some breathing room and some rest before round two comes up against Minnesota or St. Louis. So I would expect an aggressive Colorado team tonight. Now, there is some news on that front in goal. No Darcy Kuemper tonight for the Colorado Avalanche. He's going to be out tonight. Obviously, he took the stick to the eye from Ryan Johansson in Game 3, which is still mind-boggling to me that there are some on Avs Twitter that apparently think that was intentional.
Stupid.
If he is, he's quite the marksman, that Ryan Johansson. But Darcy Kuemper doesn't look like it's a serious injury, but still some swelling going on around the eye, so he's not going to be in there tonight. And Pavel Francouz will be in there tonight. So you're taking on a backup goalie. Well, the Avalanche are also taking on a backup goalie with Connor Ingram in there, but if you can get to him early, maybe you could get some confidence. You start off the game strong, get the goalie rattled a little bit, and go from there. But an interesting development there lineup-wise for Colorado in Game 4.
Was Francouz not the backup for Winnipeg 3 years ago when the Predators were, or 4 years ago, whenever it was?
That was that Bressois?
Or, yeah, was it Bressois?
I think that was Laurent Bressois.
Well,
I think.
French-sounding name.
You got me.
You may be right.
You've got me searching now, Chase.
You may be right. But that's an interesting storyline that, you know, they have their backup. The Predators obviously are to their third string goalie. So you don't have either starter that's going to be in net tonight, and the Predators are with their backs against the wall. I'm curious to see what John Hines does with the lineup. I did like in Game 3. I loved the glass move. And remember, we kind of were joking about it on Robbie and Rex Road of like, oh, no, he's not actually going to do that. And he did it.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know if he was listening to us. I'm like, hey, that's a good idea, you know, or what. But you need to ask him in post-game.
My first question.
Win, you know, if you got that idea by listening to 102.5 The Game. But,
let's do a little bit more.
Because that's a promo.
That's right. But
I liked that move. Putting Tomasino back in there was smart. Even though he hasn't done what you want him to do, I still think having Tolvanen in the lineup is better, because the trying to throw the grit at the speed of Colorado with Olivier and McCarron, it just hadn't worked. So I think that backing off on that, trying to, even though you're not going to match their speed, throwing more speed into the lineup is certainly good. Taking Cousins out was interesting.
Yep.
So I'm curious of what they do there. I mean, because Olivier was in the other night, so we'll see exactly what it looks like. But I liked throwing that out there and bringing Glass up.
Well, and Cody Glass was in the lineup. I mean, you know, McCarron was out the other night as well. You've had Olivier move up basically to the herd line with Jeannot going up there with Forsberg and Johansson. You know, I kind of like the look of the lineup the other night. I'm interested to see if they stick with that tonight in Game 4. You know, is there a chance where you could just really load up for one game and go Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne tonight? I thought there was a chance they might do that in Game 3. You know, I thought Forsberg, Johansson, and Jeannot had their moments where they were dangerous offensively. Still not probably as much as you want from those three guys. So maybe that's something you could change heading into tonight to Game 4. I don't know. I guess I'd be surprised if there were many lineup changes tonight for the Predators as they move into Game 4. I think John Hines was pretty happy with the way they played 5-on-5. And the big question is the penalty kill. And, you know, we keep talking about staying out of the box. To me, you know, I heard Darren talking about this earlier. Like, that's moving towards pipe dream territory for me. And they've not stayed out of the box all year. So if we think that they're just going to start now, staying out of the box, I don't know if I see that coming up in, what would this be, Game 86? Like, I don't know that that's going to happen. But there is an opportunity for you to kill penalties out there, which they did not do very well the other night. 4-5 on the power play for Colorado in Game 3, and that was the difference in the game. So, as I said earlier, if you're going to stay alive in this thing, it's going to require a complete effort. And we saw an outstanding goaltending performance in Game 2 from Connor Ingram. You know, not so much in Game 3. The penalty kill in front of him wasn't great, but a couple that Connor Ingram let in, and one that he basically got a primary assist on that you're probably going to want back if you're him. So if he's in there tonight again, which I assume he will be, interested to see how he bounces back from a situation like this early in his career.
Yeah, I'm curious of that too. But, you know, I think we obviously have an hour and a half to talk about all this stuff, and we're going to, but I think everybody knows what's at stake tonight. It's just kind of like, this is the throw everything but the kitchen sink, and maybe even throw the kitchen sink. Just throw everything you got, because you got nothing to lose now. I mean, your season's either going to keep going or it's going to be over tonight. And sometimes teams are the most dangerous when they're in that situation. And this is where, you know, the leadership of this team with Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchesne, even UC Saros, who's not playing, you know, this is where they come into play of like, hey, boys, what are we doing? Are we going to load up and go to Denver tomorrow, or are we going to come clean out our stuff? It's really as simple as that. So I think everybody knows what's at stake, and we'll see, you know, how Connor Ingram responds and how the rest of the team responds.
Well, to that point, I mean, you basically got two choices when you're in this situation. You can either just fold up like a tent, and we've seen that happen before in the playoffs with teams that are down 0-3, or you can come out fighting. To the Predators' credit, in Game 3, I don't think you can accuse them of laying down. Like, I thought they played their guts out in Game 3, and the execution wasn't always great. And
I don't think they've laid down at all.
No,
I think it's simply, you know, Games 1 and 2, they just showed that they were outmatched.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the best way to put it. Game 3, coming home, the crowd was not what we have seen in the past with the energy wise from a playoff crowd here, but they fed off that, and I think they dug down deep and played better. It was just special teams that really made the difference because, you know, that's the other thing, Rob. They're struggling to kill penalties, but then when they get their power play chances, they're not burying those.
Yep.
And that really starts with a guy like Forsberg or Duchesne. You know, Duchesne has, but Forsberg is the big one. I mean, it's time to see nine tonight.
Yeah, I mean, he's been, you're three games in, and he's not on the score sheet. And I know he put one off the post on the 5-on-3 in game two, and he had a couple of decent looks last game in game three, but this is the time of year when you need your big money players and your superstars to step up and answer the bell. And Duchesne has done it. I think Yossi has largely done it. He's still playing at a really high level. Other than that, not much from the Predators out there right now. And obviously that's part of the reason you're in an 0-3 hole at this point. But if right now, like I said earlier, it's about winning a game, Forsberg is going to have to be a big part of that in my mind. So we'll see if he can do that tonight. We're off and running here today on Preds Insiders. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, what has this series told us about the Predators and where they fit big picture? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Chase McCabe here with you. Leading up to Game 4 tonight between the Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. Puck drop at 8:30, pregame at 7:30 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll have Jim Diamond from the Associated Press coming up at 6:30. Get his thoughts on the game tonight as well. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Robert in Nashville is mad about the start time tonight. It says, what kind of home ice advantage is it when we have to accommodate the opponent's time zones? If the Preds are down after two, Bridgestone is going to be empty because y'all got to go to work in the morning. Why didn't we get a 7:05 start like all our other home games? This is a complaint that I have every year in the playoff, Chase McCabe. We always get stuck with 8:30 starts because we're in the central time zone.
Yep.
And inevitably, one of those will go to triple overtime.
Probably tonight. Because that's
the way it works.
You know, I'm here, you're here, Darren's going to be here, I think Jared's here.
Yeah.
We're all here, we're all ready to see what happens, and it's like, let's go triple OT and stay, you know, and the Preds will win and stay alive.
You're here till 4 a.m.
And then why even go to bed? For you.
Yeah.
You know, Joe, we can bring Joe back down here, you guys can just do the show from here, he can break some chairs, and it'll be a good time.
Yeah, sounds like a plan to me. So, Chase, obviously, we've talked about it. You're in an 0-3 hole if you're the Predators for the first time in franchise history. This is going to be very difficult for them to climb out of. What has this series told you about not only how they match up against Colorado, because that's pretty obvious at this point, but big picture, what has this series told you about the way that things have unfolded thus far three games in?
Well, it's kind of told me what I think we had figured out really halfway through the season. And that is that this team that was picked to not do anything overachieved, which is a credit to them, is a credit to, you know, David Poile and John Hines and the players. I mean, that, you know, they were picked not to make the playoffs, and they did. And they didn't back in. They were in the playoffs pretty much the whole year.
Yep.
That they were in a playoff position. So I think right there you obviously have something to build on. Now, with that said, if you don't re-sign Forsberg, it's a step back, because you got nothing for him. So that would be a step back. What this series has taught me is something I already knew. You don't have a second line. You have to get a second line. And you may have some pieces of a second line, whether it's Johansson centering or Granlund or however you want to go about it. You know, Glass eventually maybe could be that, even though I kind of see him as more of a third line guy, you know, bottom six at this point in time. But you got to go find. I think you can build with Tomasino. You can start there at one of the wings. But you got to go find another winger that can score goals for you on the second line, because you're just outmatched in that department. It's the same problem that they've had the last few years. They have one line.
Yep.
And you have the Herd that was awesome for a year and a half, and then I don't know if they hit the wall or what happened, but they've just fallen off. Now, I like the game that Trennan's played the last couple. Janot, I don't know what's going on. You know, I think fatigue is standing in there. And also, Colorado knows what he is, and so they've done a good job of trying to contain that. Same with Forsberg. But big picture-wise, I think you see some depth additions that they need to make to this team. They got to address the defense, too, because it can't just be Yossi and Ekholm doing everything. I think Carrier's fine. He's still a young player that's developing. Fabro, same way, but I also think Fabro might be what he is, which is still solid, serviceable, but maybe not a top-pair defenseman. So I think that this summer they're going to have to address those things. I'm curious to see the development of some of the younger players in Milwaukee, like an Afanasyev, you know, what he could do for the bottom six. Is Davies taking steps? You know, maybe some other defensemen too. I think that could be addressed within your pipeline, but I still think free agency is where they're going to find some of that too.
Well, the defense part of this is interesting because, you know, obviously when UC Saros goes down, that's the number one thing people are going to pay attention to. And I understand it, but they were having problems defensively long before UC Saros went down. I mean, I think about the last – and we talked about this last week on the show. Last couple weeks of the regular season, he gave up 8 to St. Louis and 6 to Tampa Bay and 5 to Minnesota and 5 to Calgary. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and UC Saros was in net for all those games. So it's one of those things where this has been a problem for the Predators now for a pretty significant stretch of time where the defense has just not been as good coming down the stretch. And the penalty kill is a part of that. They've taken a ton of penalties, and a lot of them lately have ended up in the back of their net. So that's an area of concern that you have to address as you move forward. You know, I look at this series, and I tweeted this out Saturday night after the game. It's interesting to me the spot that they're in because, you know, I do agree in a lot of ways maybe they've overachieved this year. I picked them to finish in seventh place in the Central Division this year, and they finished fifth. They made the playoffs. So obviously, you know, based on my own prediction, they overachieved that way. You had Duchesne score 43, Forsberg score 42. Yossi put up almost 100 points for the first time in 30 years as a defenseman. So there's a lot of things that went right. And then, Chase, there's the flip side of that where Duchesne scored 43, Forsberg scored 42, your goaltender had a .918 save percentage, and Yossi put up 96 points. And what was all that good enough for? It was good enough to get you a second wild card spot and good enough to maybe get you swept in the first round, depending on what happens tonight. So that's a really interesting thought because if I'm a Predators fan, my number one thought is, all right, well, what happens – if next year, if Forsberg's back, and that's a big if right now, what if he's back? He scores 31 goals instead of 42. Duchesne scores 25 goals instead of 43. What in the world happens then? Probably not a playoff team.
Well, my counter to that is, what have you done elsewhere?
Yeah.
Have you addressed the second line like I was talking about, and so some of those goals went to the second line? If that's the answer, then okay, I'm good with that. That's fine. But 42 and 43 is really, in the grand scheme of things, coming from one line. I know they haven't always played together, but you're basically getting that from your top three players. And, you know, Granlund was Granny Apples for a good chunk of the year, but that kind of fell off a little bit towards the end. So it's addressing the fall off, addressing the depth, which they're going to have to do, and, you know, defense for me. And looking at guys like David Ferentz, is he going to make this team out of camp? Is he going to be ready to be an NHL defenseman? A lot of hype then with him, and he's obviously been developing. You know, are you going to get anything from Jeremy Davies, or is Jeremy Davies an NHL defenseman at this point? You know, I know at one point John Hines said that he was an NHL defenseman, but because of the numbers game, he was playing in the NHL. If that's true, then we might see him, and maybe that helps. But I think that's...
Does it mean less of Ben Harper?
Well, probably.
That'd be great.
Yeah. I think you've answered the question of it's these little holes in the roster that are the reason that you have a Norris finalist, maybe a Vezina finalist, a 240 goal scorers, and then the, you know, Yossi obviously almost 100 points, and yet this is all you have to show for it. It's those little things have become big things.
Well, and you know, if you'd have told me the Predators were going to make the playoffs before the year, First off, I would have just laughed if you would have told me Duchesne was going to score 43 goals and Forsberg was going to score 42. But I would have thought a big part of it was, okay, well, Tolvanen has come along and he's been what we've hyped him up to be or close to it. I mean, we saw a flash of it last year. It was basically a 15-game stretch where he was producing on the power play. He was on the top unit with Josi and Forsberg. You know, he got hurt after that. And when he came back from injury last year, it wasn't the same. And into the playoffs, it wasn't the same. And right now, I don't know how you feel about this, Chase, but we've been talking about Elie Tolvanen for a long time, and I fully understand that he's still a young player. But at some point, you've got to prove that you can do it. And there's basically a 15-game sample size at the NHL level of Tolvanen producing to the level that we thought he could when he was drafted. I'm not saying that it's time to totally give up on him, but by each passing game, I'm always sitting there wondering to myself, is he ever going to be even close to what we thought he could be?
I'm going to ask Jim the same question when he comes up here, but yes or no answer. If you can trade him this summer, yes or no?
It depends on what you're getting back for him because he's cheap right now. But if you get some good back for him, yeah, I'd probably do it. I know the first response people are going to have is, well, what about Kevin Fiala? And I understand that.
You saw more from Kevin Fiala.
Well, I was about to say, you tell me. There were way more flashes of Kevin Fiala here to me than there have been of Elie Tolvanen offensively.
There were a ton more with Kevin Fiala. And this is where the organization is going to have to decide what they want to be. Because do they feel like they have enough to build on? Which, if Forsberg comes back, then I can make the argument, yes. But if that's the case, then you don't have time for – I said this to Darren earlier today. I don't have time to sit here and wait on Elie Tolvanen to get 30 years old and all of a sudden he's good. You know, that's just – now, if you're going to go into a full-on rebuild mode, have at it. See what he can develop, you know. But I don't think they want to do that.
I don't think so either. Coming up next, we'll get Jim Diamond's thoughts on the Preds as they take on the Colorado Avalanche tonight in Game 4. Get his thoughts on a certain coaching move made today in the NHL as well. Pretty incredible coaching move. All that next. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here alongside Chase McCabe, and we are joined by the genius himself, Jim Diamond, here on the program from the Associated Press. Jimmy, what's going on? How are we doing?
I don't know. Hopefully I sound as good as I look tonight.
Oh, you do look great.
Yeah, thank you.
What makes him a genius?
Everything. Just his Twitter account mainly. But my goodness.
That's true. It is a good follow.
Man, that's a shot right across the bow from McCabe over there.
It's like I got support on one side, and I get shivved on the other. So.
Jim, we got a lot to talk about here, so let's just get right to it. I'll ask you the same question I asked Chase in the last segment, which is you're down 0-3 if you're the Predators. You've been totally outmatched in this series for the most part. What has this series, this matchup, told you about where the Predators are headed big picture and the trajectory of the team?
I don't think it's good. I think I did overhear Chase pointing out that they're, you know, a one and a half line team basically, and one third of that one line is probably going to be leaving here after tonight or, you know, Wednesday at best. So they don't match up well with Colorado, and Colorado is a young, skilled team. They're going to be together and around for a while. So this was the least ideal matchup for them in the playoffs. I mean, they have no one to blame but themselves for this first-round matchup, but it was going to be exposed whether it was in this round or the next round. I think Calgary would have been a much better matchup, but they don't match up well with Colorado.
Watching the Dallas-Calgary series, I do wonder what might have been because I still think Calgary probably wins, and I think ultimately they're going to beat Dallas, but it's more of a series. For sure. It just, I think to your point, you see the speed of Colorado. So I guess my question is Forsberg, no Forsberg, can they turn the, because I've seen teams turn it around pretty quick that, you know, they either miss the playoffs or they get bounced in the first round, whether it's a sweep or not. And then they make a couple of changes here and there and they're good. They're working their way up. Do you think that this team is that close when you look at the organization from top to bottom, including some top prospects in Milwaukee?
I'm not sure they are. I don't see the kind of the push from the prospects in Milwaukee that we've seen in years past. It used to be just a pipeline of 8 or 9 defensemen deep. I mean, you know, yep. I know you mentioned Ferentz as a possibility, but is he able to step in? I mean, the top four is pretty solidified short term, which is great, but their bottom two defensemen have been a mess for 3-4 years now. They just haven't been able to find chemistry, keep anybody healthy, just somebody to take, you know, the penalty killing minutes, if anything, to take the load off the top four. So I'm not overly optimistic on where they're going. I think if this season was a week longer, they don't even make the playoffs. I think Vegas catches them and they're on the outside looking in. So it's they're just kind of in flux, and I don't think it's a great position to be in right now.
Jim Diamond on with us here on Preds Insiders. So, Jim, there was a move made today in the NHL regarding a man that you are very familiar with, that most of Nashville are very familiar with, Barry Trotz, fired by the New York Islanders. You take him to the conference final 2 years in a row. One off year this year, which, by the way, they started the season with 13 games consecutively on the road. A couple of different times, they had more than a week in between games based on the schedule. You had injuries. You had a team where some of them were older than Methuselah, and they missed the playoffs, and Barry Trotz gets the axe today from Lou Lamoriello. Number one, what did you make of that move from the Islanders? And number two, as you can imagine, a lot of Preds fans are now clamoring for the reunion for Barry Trotz coming back here. What do you think of that idea as well?
Going back 4 years, I was shocked Barry even took the job to work for Lou Lamoriello. I just didn't think that their personalities would match, and I'm actually a little surprised that it lasted for 4 years. But nothing Lou does surprises me. I can't imagine he thinks he's, you know, who he thinks he's going to get that's going to be a better coach than Trotz. I just thought to myself. You know, what coaches are in the league? I think there's probably 5 teams in the league that wouldn't fire their coach to hire Barry Trotz right now if they had to. I loved seeing, like, the Philly fans and the Winnipeg fans saying, oh, we'd love to get him now if they have openings for their terrible teams. And, like, Trotz's not going to go coach them. I mean, he'll coach a team that's good, or he'll be a general manager. I mean, it's
– So you're ruling out Winnipeg?
I can't imagine he would want that job. I know everybody –
That's where he's from.
Right. I think that's exactly the reason – one of the reasons why is, you know – a lot of people don't want to be in their hometowns. I know we had that big dust up at the trading deadline where that dude from Vegas with his no trade clause.
Yes.
And I was talking to, you know, a couple of the league scouts and stuff like that. And they're like, they don't want those no trade lists publicized because a lot of them put their hometowns on the list because they don't want to have to deal with that. So I don't see how Trotz could be seen as a savior of the Winnipeg Jets and everything, because I don't think they're a very good team. They have some good pieces, but I don't think they're a good coach away from contending like they were back in, you know, 16, 17, 18, when they kind of had the big rivalry with the Predators.
So, Jim, to that point, whether it's Trotz or somebody else, obviously there's a lot of noise right now from Predators fans. I mean, we saw the game on Saturday. It was kind of a different playoff atmosphere here based on what we've been used to seeing, and we'll see what it looks like tonight. But whether it's tonight or game 5, I mean, the writing is on the wall for this series. What do you think happens as they move forward here? Could there be any moves at head coach, at general manager, or do you think they're coming back with everything intact heading into next year?
I'd be surprised if there were any wholesale changes. There wasn't much expected of this team, and I didn't expect much from them. So getting into the playoffs is something to celebrate to some degree, but and coaching, I think John Hines has done a reasonably good job with what he's been given. The roster is not a spectacular one, I don't think, top to bottom, and as we mentioned, so he's not been given you know, a lot of tools. I do have concerns about the discipline, lack thereof, on this team, because every time we ask John Hines about the penalties, it's been addressed, or we've addressed this with the team, and they're still the most penalized team in the league. David Poile seems like the ultimate backing of ownership has since they came on board, and I thought he would have been shown the door years ago, but it didn't happen. So I don't see anything here, any great failings that would cause me to think he would be gone.
So, okay, Jim Diamond is with us. Let me go back to Trotz for a second. Not as the coach. If he decided that he wanted to take time off from coaching, and you brought him in the front office as some sort of advisory role, you know that everything I've heard and seen when he's been back here, he and David Poile still have a very good relationship. And it's a way to get an outsider's view from somebody that knows what it looks like from the inside. Do you think that's a possibility?
I'm not sure Trotsky would want to do that. I think he's earned his stripes enough to, if he's going to be a general manager, an assistant general manager, that he would probably step in and do that. But I can't imagine him in an advisory role unless that's what he really wanted, and I would think that would be short term. So I think he's probably knows what he wants to do, and if he wants to be a general manager, some ownership group is going to give him that opportunity because he's been in the game so long and knows it and knows you know the people in the game so well that I think he could slide into that role immediately without kind of having those intermediate steps.
Jim Diamond on with us here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Jim, obviously you're down 0-3 heading into this game. You know, John Hines talked about the 5-on-5 play the last time out. The penalty kill was just atrocious last time out, and Colorado did whatever they wanted to do on the power play. Lineup-wise, is there anything you can do at this point that you've not tried? Is it the same lineup in Game 3, or are you just kind of letting the bullets fly tonight as to maybe pulling out all the stops has already happened in this series?
Yeah, I liked what our friend Adam Vingan asked John after the last game about Luke Kunin now. Yeah. You know, I think Hines is kind of forced to keep him in the lineup after the answer that he gave. But, you know, just him consistently being in the top six is kind of mind-blowing. And, you know, he's probably the Predators' worst forward by far, fancy stats-wise, and add in the dumb penalties that he's good for one dumb penalty a game.
It's unbelievable.
An offensive zone hooking or a holding, just it's amazing because I like him as a player, but I just don't know how you can consistently do that. I mean, it's not a hard play where you're, you know, trying to make a play on a puck and accidentally take a guy down. It's just dumb, you know, holds and yeah, you know, stuff that you don't need to do. So I think he needs less time. I know you were talking about Ellie Tolvanen, and, you know, give him a shot. You know, the goal he scored, not many other players on this roster can do that. You need to score goals. You know, let it rip. He's going to be more successful than Luke Kunin, I think.
Would you be ready to give up on Tolvanen in the offseason or not yet?
I'm not. I don't think you're going to get much for him. This team doesn't need more draft picks right now. They need players. So I don't think you're going to get a player with his level of talent in exchange for him. So I think the money's so low, it's fine if he doesn't perform right now. But I'd see what he can do. I know it seems like he should be about 30 right now, but he's, what, 22, 23? Yeah. So, you know, it does take a minute for some of them to mature, maybe some of the Euros a little bit longer to adjust to the game, even though he's been over for a few years. But I see it as a low-risk maneuver, you know, keeping him here and seeing what else he can do. But he's obviously on a short list with Hines now with a couple of healthy scratches. But I don't see the real risk in keeping him around.
All right, Jim, last thing for you here. It's 0-3 hole the Predators are in tonight. What happens in this game tonight? Are they forced into Game 5, or is this all she wrote tonight for the Preds?
Rob, what was the gif I sent you in the group chat prior to the series start?
It was a nice Barry Trotz gif in 4.
Nope, it was a curling sweep.
Oh, it was the curling sweep. That's right.
GIF. So no, they're done for. This isn't going. It's probably going to go 3 overtime just because it's an 8:45 yes. start on Monday night. But they're done.
Jim Diamond from the Associated Press, our guest here on Preds Insiders. Jimmy, great stuff, brother. I'll see you up at the press box.
Love you, boys.
All righty. Jim Diamond, our guest here. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. Got Jeremy K. Gover coming up at 7 o'clock as well in advance of the Preds and the Avalanche. Yeah, he's like Brett Favre, just coming out all the time. We'll get your thoughts, 615-737-1025. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Little Creed bringing us back in.
This is for you, Joe.
Who doesn't love Creed? Joe, who knows? Maybe we'll see. You know, he's been in a Preds game before. It's a little Scott Stapp. Maybe that'll happen again at some point.
I think it's on Twitter.
We'll have to wait and see. Oh, is it on Twitter? Well, look, Scott Stapp may be at the game tonight. Never know. Because we'll find out.
I just work here. I don't know.
We'll have Jeremy K. Gover coming up at 7 o'clock here on the program. Chase, what do you think of the Barry Trotz stuff? Obviously, Trotsky fired today by the New York Islanders. As Jim pointed out in the last segment, there's not really much that Lou Lamoriello can do that surprises me at this point. I think my favorite part of the press conference today was, this is what's best for the players. And then 2 minutes later, Lamoriello admitted that he had not spoken to any players about this. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. You just keep being you, Lou. What do you make of the idea? Obviously, people have made that connection to the Predators with the job being open. And Pierre LeBrun reported earlier that apparently Trotsky's going to take about a week to decide what he wants to do. Maybe that's in management. Maybe it is still in coaching. What do you make of, number one, the Islanders' decision to let Trots go? And number two, obviously, that's been a pretty heavy source of reaction from Predators fans today, staring down the barrel of a sweep tonight, potentially, against Colorado.
I would say that last time I talked to Barry was probably 3 or 4 months ago, and that's when they were going through the COVID stuff, and they hadn't even been in their arena yet, and so there was a lot of stuff that was stacked against them. But I could still hear that fire that you hear from a coach. And I look at the openings right now. Now, if Vegas opens up, okay, that changes things, because all of a sudden that's a pretty good job that's open. But Winnipeg is, okay. Chicago, Detroit, So I don't know if there's really a job that's open right now today that really would knock his socks off, because I think he has earned the right that he wants to walk into a team that is not in rebuild. He did that enough in his career. He paid his dues with an expansion team. So I think he wants to walk into a contender. But with that said, you know, if he wants to stay in the game, if he wants to take a year off but not take a full year off, so to speak, I think what I threw out there to Jim of maybe an advisory role, and not necessarily here, but an advisory role somewhere that he could kind of look and decide, am I ready to still coach or am I ready to go front office? You know, what do I want to do there? But as for what Preds fans are throwing out there, I go over. What Preds fans are throwing out there of trading Hines for Trotz, I love Barry. I don't see it happening. I think because, and Jim said it best, I think because this team has overachieved that I don't know if they've necessarily done enough to justify that move.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I said this earlier, though, on Twitter. You know, I am not in the crowd that thinks that John Hines needs to be fired. I think John Hines has done a good job. I think in a lot of ways, you know, with the roster that he's had, he's made, you know, maybe not the best out of the situation, but he's done a good job. I mean, Duchesne played awesome this year. Forsberg was great. Yossi was great. You know, I hear a lot of Predators fans talking about Tolvin and Cunnan. Well, if you're going to slam him for Tolvin and Cunnan, you have to give him credit for Duchesne and Forsberg and all these guys that have produced. So, you know, it's an interesting situation. I think he's done a good job. Having said that, if you think that Barry Trotz is interested in coming back as head coach, you got to do it. And again, I have no clue as to whether or not Barry Trotz would even entertain that. I have no clue if he wants to come back here, if he wanted to continue coaching. I don't know what's going through Barry Trotz's mind, but that's no disrespect to John Hines. Barry Trotz is a better coach than John Hines is. And if you learn that he is interested in coming back here and being your head coach, to me, you got to do it if you're the Predators. Now, again, the likelihood of that happening, I don't think is very high, but I'm not dismissing it out of hand. That's something that I'd want to know if I'm a Predators fan, is would Barry Trotz be interested? Because if he is, I'm probably doing that if I'm the Predators.
Yeah, and the situation is John Hines has an option on the contract that the team can either pick up or not. And that's going to be a part of the offseason plan and the next decision of, you know, what they want to do. You know, if I'm looking at things from the organization's point of view, and specifically David Poile, and he originally used the phrase competitive rebuild, and then he changed that to competitive transition. If I'm looking at it from that standpoint, I think you speed that transition up by trading Hines. And I agree with everything you just said, that I'm not in the fire Hines camp, but Barry Trotz would be an upgrade. He's won a Stanley Cup.
He's a Hall of Fame head coach.
He's third on the all-time wins list. So I think that you certainly would look at that. And if Barry's like, yeah, you know what, I'm interested, I'd come back. Let's put the band back together one more time. And if you're Poile and you think it speeds up the process, then okay. But being realistic and watching the moves that this organization's made in the past, I would say it's probably not going to happen.
Well, I mean, the odds are, I mean, we talk about moves that have been made. They've had three head coaches in the history of their franchise, and they've had one general manager in the history of your franchise. Like, good Lord, there are teams in Canada that go through that in 2 years. I mean, it's unbelievable, the amount of turnover in this league sometimes. So I don't think it's a high chance that it happens at all. I just – This is what happens when a move like that is made, and Jim brought it up. What are there, 25 teams in the league, 26 teams in the league that would take Barry Trotz at the drop of the hat right now and not move on from their coach? I mean, that's – if he wants to coach again, he's going to have a pretty good pick of the litter of where he wants to be.
I will use it. This is the perfect example to use then. If you're Vegas right now, and, you know, I think everybody in this room would agree Pete DeBoer is a pretty good coach.
Yeah.
Okay. You're sitting there and you're going, and this morning you see the news, and maybe you were leaning, oh, I'm going to keep Pete DeBoer. Well, now all of a sudden you're rethinking things because a Stanley Cup winning coach just became available that could come in tomorrow and instantly make your team better. And you already got a pretty good team. So
yeah.
I you missed the playoffs, but a lot of circumstances there. So I agree with you. I mean, I think there are some teams that we're probably back and forth or on the fence, and now it's all of a sudden they got to think even harder about it and start making phone calls. I mean, he's going to get phone calls from teams that you wouldn't expect just to say, hey, would you be interested? Would you want to come here? And who knows? Maybe 615 just show up on his phone. I don't know.
Think Washington makes that call? I doubt it. Probably not.
I don't know.
Hey,
I don't know about that.
They very well could be on their way to taking down the President's Trophy winners with Peter Laviolette. We'll see what happens on the front. Look, it's going to be an interesting point of conversation. Whenever that decision is made, hey, look, when the Predators, you know, whether it's tonight, Game 5, maybe they extend it to make this thing interesting coming down the stretch, but the writing's on the wall for this series. They're in trouble. I mean, this thing it's over. They're not going to win this series. So how do you combat that? How do you come back from that if you're the Predators and try to get better? And Jim brought up the other part of this, which is really interesting. Now you have the Philip Forsberg contract situation, which, you know, we've talked about so much this year. I'm kind of blown away that that's not been resolved at this point. Like, when you make the decision to keep him through the deadline, you have to be so aggressive in terms of trying to keep him. And look, I'm not saying the Predators can't get it done with Forsberg anymore. You're going to have 2 months to work on it after this series is over. But if you've not been able to make any progress on it or get the deal done at this point, is it not unreasonable to think that maybe you're just not going to get a deal done and maybe he wants to test free agency? And that's kind of the thoughts that are starting to creep in here when it comes to Forsberg. So, and look, I know there's this segment of the population out there that's like, well, who needs him? He doesn't have a point yet in 3 games in this series. The guy just scored 42 goals. He's a pretty darn good hockey player. Think about what this team looks like without him. If you're the Predators and you decided to keep him, you better do everything you can do to get him signed coming up in the next couple of months.
I think the people that say that are the same people that go through about 6 jerseys a year because they get mad and throw it out and then go buy a new one. So, you know, just saying.
That may happen to me sometimes with Packers.
Well, you know, I've watched sporting events with you, so I know how that goes for sure, but – just to wrap that up on Forsberg, I mean, I had the opportunity throughout this year to talk to David Poile pretty much every week.
Yep.
And a lot of times I was the one asking, you know, where are we at? And there are times that he would bring it up unsolicited, you know, and that would tell me, okay, he's having good conversations. They're close. And it was, all right, is the deadline the goal? The deadline's the goal. Okay, is the end of the season the goal? Okay. And it just never got there. So, you know, I think that maybe it's been a harder negotiation than people initially thought. And Philip is doing his due diligence. But I'll give Philip Forsberg credit. He told you at the beginning of the season he's going to play out his contract. and that's what he's done.
So far, he's on pace to do that. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Jeremy K. Gover. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds and Avalanche heading into Game 4 tonight and some decisions the Predators could have looming their way as well. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here alongside Chase McCabe. We joined here in a second by Jeremy K. Gover coming up. We're leading up to Preds pregame tonight, coming up at 7:30 with Darren McFarland in advance of game number 4 between the Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. They'll try to avoid the sweep tonight here at Bridgestone Arena. So, Jeremy, I've known you for a long time now. I've always thought your name was Jeremy K. Gover.
Mm-hmm.
There is evidence to the contrary.
We have
tonight.
Breaking news, Robbie.
Jeremy Gomer,
yes.
From AP Radio.
That's right.
As the media credential reads tonight. Mr. Gomer, welcome to Preds Insiders. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Gomer, thanks you very well. Mr. Gomer also talks in third person,
yes.
Just so you know.
Thank you.
I thought your name was Brett Favre as much as you've retired and unretired.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Favre in here.
Let's get one thing straight, okay? I retired from my Preds Radio Network
I give you a Preds profile. And
I know.
You know,
and I appreciate that. But I had to keep my toe in the water. And so AP Radio was my outlet to do that. And so I'm working tonight's game for AP Radio.
Justin Bradford called me to tell me that, you know, he was stepping down.
I've heard
and not,
this.
Not doing penalty box radio. And I basically was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, I've heard this before. Whatever you say.
like, all right, you're not getting a tribute. You're not getting anything. Gomer ruined it for
that's
everybody.
Right. So Gomer, obviously, this Predators team.
It's Gomer, Robbie.
You're right. Excuse me.
Mr. Powell.
Predators team in a tough spot tonight, down 0-3 in this series, trying to avoid a sweep for the first time in franchise history.
Yeah.
What have you made of this series so far, other than the obvious of Colorado up on the scoreboard 3-0 in the series? What stands out to you about why the Predators haven't been able to be more competitive in this series?
There's two things, actually, and I'm sure there's like 17 more, but there's two things that come to mind, and that is the first one is the fact that every time the Predators take a penalty, it's almost inevitable, or at least it seems inevitable, that the Avalanche are going to score immediately afterwards. And so what's crazy about that is there were some of us, myself included, but I'm sure you guys as well, who put this as like red flag number one coming into the series. Don't take stupid penalties. You're going to take penalties no matter what. Okay, I mean, it's going to happen. You're going to get you stick caught in some skates or whatever it is, and you're going to get a penalty. You know, but through the course of a game, for sure. But don't give them any. I mean, don't take any offensive zone penalty. I mean, you know, things like that that are totally avoidable. And so we saw it coming, and I think that's the most infuriating thing. You saw it coming. Don't take any stupid penalties, and you give yourselves a shot. Instead, they continue to take penalties, and Colorado continues to come right back and score and make them pay for it. And that is the opposite of what the Predators are doing. The opposite of the Predators get an opportunity to score, and they overall, I know they have, but they overall haven't. You don't have the same kind of fear. When Colorado goes in the power play, you're like, well, there's an 80% chance they're going to put the puck in the net right here. When the Preds get on the power play, you're like, God, I hope the Preds put the puck in the net right here. Like, it's more of a hope as opposed to a belief.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two is Colorado's transition game. Their transition is so fast and so fluid and so flawless that it's hard for the Predators to even step up and compete with that because of the speed also. But then if you look at the Predators play, let's just take Game 3, for example. Game 3, I even tweeted this out. There's a lot of things that happened in Game 3 that were like inches off. So there's a cross-ice pass to a wide-open Forsberg, just for example, and it's just behind him enough that he can't one-time it or do something else with it. He's got to like think about what he's going to do because it's just off, you know? And then the outlet pass that they're trying to clear the zone to get a line change on a penalty kill, something like that, and it's kept in at the line because he didn't use the glass, he just used the boards. You know, I mean, it's inches away from, like, getting out.
Yep.
Just things like that over and over and over again, where if you look, it's stark contrast to how Colorado is playing, which is tape to tape, seam to seam, perfectly executed. Just I mean, getting out of the zone, clearing the zone. I mean, everything is just so polished and flawless, and that is the major difference, those two things.
Jeremy K. Gover is with us here on Preds Insiders. And do you think that it would have made much of a difference if Saros was in net? Because I think we all agree that, you know, Connor Ingram has done an admirable job you know, being in net, considering with what he has. But is there a game that stands out that you think, okay, maybe Saros steals that one?
Well, okay, for the easy answer is no. Okay, so I think Jim Diamond, I think, had said on Twitter on Saturday, I would like to have seen this series with Saros in net. And I responded with, I don't think it would have made much difference. Yes, it would have made difference in the sense that the domino effect, right? Game one, he doesn't give up four of those five goals that Riddick gave up. Okay, so yeah. They're in a different situation, and therefore the game unfolds differently. Okay,
sure.
So yes, he would have made it, literally he would have made a difference in that regard. Okay, but you can't tell me that he would have played better than Connor Ingram in game two.
No.
So and even if he plays the same, it's still not better, right? So there, so you don't set up that story. So then, therefore, if even if the Preds win game one in Denver, again, it, just like in Pittsburgh in the yeah. Cup final run, it's a domino effect, right? Forsberg's not called offside, the whole series changes, right? Yep. I mean, there's all, you know, all that stuff. So I guess my point is no, I don't think it would have mattered. I don't know if they'd be down 0-3.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
But but you don't know that, though. So right. I'm saying that no, the easy answer is no. No, it would not have mattered much.
And the reason I'm going there is because I agree with you. I think that you're right, and here's why. You guys remember for a long time, and I still don't have an explanation for this. You could, on TV, they could have blurred out who was in goal mm-hmm. for the Predators, and you would have known by watching the team in front of that person, because when 35 was in, there was a different energy, and whoever the backup was, whether it was Chris Mason, whether it was Dan Ellis, it didn't matter. They were different. And
okay.
I haven't
I'll go
seen,
with you on that so far.
I haven't seen that basically in the last 3 years, that Saros got to the point where it was, okay, you got the same energy level from the team that you did when it was Pekka or when it was Saros. And even this year with Riddick, I still saw the same. Now, they didn't always play well.
No, right.
But it was... But it was like the same. So
I see what you're saying.
I've kind of seen the same thing with Ingram. So I agree with you.
Okay. So, yes. But one of my keys to game two, I think it was, and game one, too, especially, but game two, especially because it was going to be Connor Ingram's net, right, was that the Predators needed to help him out. So they didn't have Saros back there, a Vezina Trophy candidate still, to erase mistakes. They couldn't rely on that. They had to step up for their backup goaltenders. Riddick or Ingram, didn't matter who it was,
yeah.
Even though I believed it should have been Ingram from the start, even, regardless of that they had to step up and seal off that slot, push plays to the outside, give him help, clear rebounds, all that stuff. A new attention to detail, a refocus to defensive detail. And you are absolutely right. They did not. They have did not and have not done that. They've helped out their goaltender on several occasions, for sure, like one-off plays, things like that. But overall, you're right. If you... There's been no kind of like, all right. I mean, to really dumb it down is he's not as good, whoever he is not as good as UC Saros. So therefore, we need to help him out. There's been none of that. It's been like, no, we trust our guy.
Yep.
And it's been the same lack of attention, quite honestly, to detail in the defensive zone, especially in the slot area and in front of the net, that it's hurt them. It's hurt them over and over again in this series with a dangerous team like Colorado.
Outside of Philip Forsberg, because that speaks for itself in terms of his contract, what is the most intriguing part of this team? If it ends tonight, if it ends in game five, game six, where however deep you want to go with this thing, what is the most intriguing part of this team this offseason in your mind, outside of the obvious of Philip Forsberg?
Wow, that's a great question. I'll say
you're welcome.
I'll say Matt Duchene.
Okay,
I'll go two ways with it. A positive way, I'll say Matt Duchene, because he has never really been a performer outside of contract years, and here this is a non-contract year for him, and yes, he put up all those points and scored 40 goals. That's wonderful, but then you put him into the playoffs, a tournament he hasn't really been a part of too much, and he is their only star.
Yeah.
Period. I mean, okay, Roman Josi is Roman Josi, but so aside from him.
Forward.
Yeah, forward. Thank you. His only forward star is Matt Duchene. And if you'd asked me that, I don't know, a year ago today, I'd have been like, you're crazy if you think that. So That's surprised me and impressed me a lot, is that he has risen to the occasion. It wasn't just a regular season thing. He's actually carrying the team right now, offensively anyway, on his back. The second thing I'll say is the negative, which is, I don't know what that was.
I did not do that.
The ghosts of Patron Platinum Club. The second thing, the negative one, is that Tanner Janot seems to – I thought this would be a series for him to exact his attitude and his gameplay on a skillful Avalanche team who would end up being intimidated by him every time he's on the ice.
Yeah.
And he has been invisible. Yeah. I haven't seen him do much of anything, let alone blast somebody on the boards and make a real statement. You know, I've seen frustration, things like that, but not a set the tone, things like that. And that is probably the biggest shocker for me, is I thought for sure if I could count on anybody in the bottom six, so to speak, to set the tone, do the right thing, maybe not pitch in offensively, but do all the little things, would be Tanner Janot, and I haven't seen any of that. And it just – this team – I don't know if you guys agree with me. I think, Robbie, I think you do. This team lost the Dallas series – because Dallas pushed them around,
yep.
And they didn't score. They couldn't score a single power play goal. 0 for 19, I think, is what the number was.
Yep.
That's why they lost that series. It's not that Dallas is a better team. They just – Preds got pushed around. They weren't built for that, and then they couldn't score on the power play. So I thought this was the opposite. I thought, okay, Colorado's a skillful team. They're going to, you know, they're going to be intimidated by the big bruisers of Trennan and the Herd line especially. And, I mean, Trennan's been doing well, but Janot has been – he probably did hit, like Darren said earlier today on Darren Donick and Chase, he probably hit the proverbial wall, and we're seeing the effects of that now, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think he did. I'm breaking my own rules. Sorry, Rob.
You do whatever you want to do.
He's your program. he's the suit. Yeah. So.
No, but okay.
I got lights falling down on top of me. All
to your point about Duchesne, because we were talking about this earlier, like what happens if Duchesne goes from 43 goals to 25?
Sure.
And my counter to that was, okay, well, if you've addressed the second line and you've taken some goals away and it's because you brought in a winger that's scoring more, mm-hmm. then I'm fine with that. You agree? You either agree with that?
I agree with that. Yeah, you don't need them all from one person. You need to have a balanced attack. And we're seeing that especially in this series where they can't really get anything going. But Duchesne seems to be doing just fine. But if you've got a guy like Phil Kessel... I'm just picking a name out of a hat that I thought was halfway realistic.
How many years are we going to go with him running
into
the Predators?
No, that I thought was halfway realistic at the deadline. So if you got a guy like Phil Kessel to separate out that, then I think you've got a sniper on another line, and now you can do really well. The problem is the other guys that are supposed to step up for this team are not.
Gover, do you have time to hang around for another segment?
You know, I would love to.
You know, we'll do that on this other side. More with Jeremy Gomer coming up next from AP Radio, as some people would say.
I'm going to fix the desk.
To Preds Insiders. Hopefully we're still alive after this break.
That's why we can't.
Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Look out!
Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Chase McCabe and Jeremy K. Gover here with you on this Monday night in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Preds pregame coming up next with Darren McFarland, who'll get you set for the Preds and the Avalanche coming up tonight in
Game 4.
I'm
tweeting that, don't worry.
The professionalism has totally left the building here at Preds Insiders, but you know what? There wasn't much professionalism to begin with. Gover, while we've got you here, one more segment here on the program. I do want to get your thoughts on the Barry Trotz situation.
Obviously, I'd love to talk about this.
A heavy point of emphasis today, heavy point of conversation with Predators fans today. He was fired by the New York Islanders,
ridiculous.
And now he is available. Should he want to coach anymore? Should he want to join me? I almost said me.
Well, you.
He didn't want to do that.
He could join you in Nashville.
Well, that's fine. He wants to join, you know, management, whatever the case may be. Barry Trotz will be able to do whatever he wants. What do you think of, number one, the idea that he's out there? And number two, the reaction from some Preds fans today of saying, hey, if he's out there, go get him if you're David Poile and the Predators.
So – this is a multifaceted answer, because the first part is it's ridiculous that he got fired.
It really is.
Okay. Assuming that we know everything, which is that they fired him just because they didn't make the playoffs. Like, assuming that's the reason, which we have no reason to believe anything else, it's just insane. That's number one. Number two is he's going to be one of the highliest, is that right? Highliest coveted coaches?
Nailed it.
Most coveted coaches out there. This free agency period. Look,
no wonder you retired.
It's a late start, Chase. Get me some slack. So he's going to be one of the most coveted coaches this free agency period and this summer. And I just find it hard to believe that he won't have a bidding war. But that being said, you guys were correct. A couple segments ago, you said that he's an upgrade over Hines, even though you're not on the fire Hines train. And I would actually agree with that. I think Hines has done an admirable job, as far as I can tell, from everything that, you know, I mean, just resurrecting Matt Duchene alone gets him props.
Sure.
Okay. Just
Forsberg,
that.
Yossi. Yeah.
But Forsberg, you can be like, he's a contract. I mean, you can discount to contract year, you know, whatever. But the fact that Duchene, again, only has, he has 2 70-point seasons in his career, both came during contract years. So for him to have this kind of season, a 40-goal season, in a non-contract, in the middle of his contract, in a place that he's been much maligned by the fan base, is a work of art, honestly. Yep. So you got to give him props for that. Anyway, all that being said, Coach Trotz is an upgrade over Coach Hines, even though I'm not in the fire Hines camp. And but then again, it's all circumstance, right? You can't complain when somebody signs a contract for $10 million a year if that's what the market set for them that year. And then the next year, they're like, oh, they should be making 12 based on – well, their window's gone. They signed it, you know, when their window was available. Well, it's the same thing. Hines probably earned a shot to come back and get another shot at this whole thing, the option. You mentioned the option of his contract. To pick up the option. He probably earned that. But if you've got a Coach Trotz back there who's just out there in the wind and – if he shows interest in coming back, you have to explore that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
don't see how this is even a question, honestly.
He's going to get phone calls from teams that don't even have openings right now. I mean,
yes, that's correct.
I mean, Flyers are open. Detroit's open. Chicago has an interim, but that's open.
Edmonton's got an interim.
All three of those would not be good destinations for if he wants to win.
Winnipeg is open.
Winnipeg's okay. They got players. Edmonton's a good one, though.
Edmonton's a good one. I'll give you another one that's not open, and the series has taken a turn in their favor. But I think it could be looked at. Boston.
Okay. I thought about that.
If they ultimately lose that series, which I think they're going to.
Okay.
Bruce Cassidy's a good coach.
Yeah.
But Jerry Trotz is available.
Okay.
I'll throw this one at you real quick, and I don't think this is going to happen, especially with the way that they've looked so far. But let's say Colorado gets through this series and either Minnesota or St. Louis takes them down next series.
Which is 100% possible.
That is 3 years in a row where they have been unbelievable in the regular season and have never gotten past the second round.
Yes.
I don't think that they would move on from Jared Bednar then, but we've seen crazier stuff happen.
We saw this.
I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, if you're now, Pierre LeBrun put it out there earlier that apparently Trotz is going to take a week to make a decision. And Colorado is not going to be eliminated in a week, so I can tell you that. But I don't know. That was interesting to me today. Can you imagine, like, if you're Barry Trotz going from the Islanders to Colorado, if Jared Bednar.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. Real quick, go over. Here's the other thing, too. Barry Trotz has enough skins on the wall that if he's like, he talks to his family and they're like, Dad, take a year off.
Yeah.
Let's just take a year off. Let's hang out. A lot of his family still lives here.
Mm-hmm.
So come hang out in Nashville and just take a year off to decide, do I still want to coach? Which ultimately, I think that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Or am I ready to go front office and do something that way? You know, he could use that year to talk to people like a David Poile of, okay, do you think I'm ready for this transition? And just take a step back. And guess what? If he did that, the same teams that have a coach that aren't necessarily ready to move on,
and
but Barry Trotz is an upgrade, and maybe some new ones, they're still going to be there.
That's right.
So the ball is in his court.
So I want to say one thing about that. I thought about this today on the drive into the arena. Trotz was maligned here towards the end, obviously. He's beloved. But towards the end, he was much maligned about how he can't coach offense, and the Preds can't ever score, and the defensive first team, all this stuff.
Yeah.
He leaves. Laviolette comes in with obviously an offensive game plan, but he comes in, and they immediately outfit him with James Neal, like guys that are specifically here to put the puck in the back of the net, okay? Trotz never got that. He never got that. Oh, hey, go out and get me a score, like a pure goal scorer, like a James Neal. He never got that. So Forsberg comes into his own.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Yossi comes into his own.
Yep.
Okay. Neil gets they acquire Neil. I mean, like right off. You know, right at the draft. So all of a sudden, there's PK Subban. Eventually, they come in.
Johansson.
Thank you. They come in waves. All of a sudden, with all these tools.
Yeah.
And Laviolette does what he does, which is breaks early and goes takes into a deep run. So my point is, if Trotz takes over this team next year, he's got Duchesne, Forsberg, hopefully, Johansson, Yossi, Eklund. These guys, Tolvanen, Tomasino, he's got weapons, Granlund, around or on the roster, and he doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, and I think to that point, because that group of people that said those things, a lot of them watched from the beginning.
Sure, so, of course.
So it was very hard to, even though it wasn't fair, it was hard to wash the expansion years and then the early playoff years from their memory. But then they watch him go to Washington.
Where he is surrounded by stars.
And those same people said, oh, he'll ruin Ovechkin. He'll try and turn Ovechkin into a defensive player. He'll ruin Ovechkin.
Right.
Ovechkin scored more goals than he ever had in a year.
And he kind of won the cup.
And then they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So he had to, but he had to go do that. And I think he had to go do that.
I agree with that.
He had to go do that for the fan base, and he had to go do that from maybe other people too, to say, oh, you know what? He's a hell of a coach.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that part of it plays out because, as you said, Chase, I mean, there are going to be a lot of options for Barry Trotz over the course of this next week. Jeremy Gover, we appreciate you taking time to join us here tonight on the program.
Thank you guys for having me. I this bonus segment. It's very humbling that you guys would have me on for two. I appreciate that. And I love you. I love both you guys.
Thank you very much. We love you too. Chase, great stuff tonight, as always.
Thank you.
The suit is here. So far, the desk is held up as well.
Yeah, suit is delusional. Tired.
We'll get you all set tonight. Coverage for Game 4 of the Predators and the Avalanche coming up next. You'll be joined by Darren McFarland as he takes over for Preds pregame, looking ahead to game number 4. This has been Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.